We'll finish text 7. Who's read text 8 so far? Good. Is anyone, who else has read 8? Raise your hand. Okay, there's a chance we should possibly do half of 8. Now in text 7, the holy name, character, pastimes, and activities of Krishna are all transcendentally sweet, like sugar candy. Although the tongue of one afflicted by the joyments of avidya, ignorance, cannot taste anything sweet, it is wonderful that simply by carefully chanting these sweet names every day, a natural relish awakens within his tongue, and his disease is gradually destroyed at the root. So here, in this verse, as Prabhupada will explain in the last section, the process of removing the contaminations of material life are described. So the first section of the purport describes how we are Krishna's servant, but we are covered. We do not belong in the material world, although we have put our faith in materialistic life. Prabhupada then explains that the whole world, all the societies of the world, are surcharged with materialistic nescience. And in that atmosphere, it is very difficult to seriously take up Krishna consciousness. Yet, just as a person whose body is diseased takes with the disease of jaundice, if he takes the medicine of sugar candy, that disease will gradually be cured. So similarly, those who are covered with the materialism and nescience, their disease of nescience will be cured by the constant chanting of the holy names. The avidya will be removed. Now, that chanting should be done offenselessly, and then the effect will be very quick. So that's what we read up to yesterday. Now, on page 70, Prabhupada starts by saying the conclusion is that in order to get freed from the material disease, one must take to the chanting of Krishna, of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And this chanting works, Prabhupada explains, and even if one just doesn't have any knowledge, if one just begins to chant Hare Krishna, then the results will come. Then Prabhupada, starting more or less at the top of 70 and continuing to page 71, he goes through the process of the cleansing of the heart. As Rupa Goswami describes in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that verse describing first step is Ado Shraddha, first there is Shraddha, Tata Saru Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, and then Anartana Vritti Syat. And then from Anartana Vritti, there's Nishta, and then comes Ruchi, then Ashakti, Bhava, and Prema, and these happen gradually, step by step. So Prabhupada goes through this process of becoming cleansed, going from Shraddha, or the very beginning of faith, to the process of Prema. He goes through this entire process in the last part of the purport. Prabhupada explains, one begins with faith, and that faith is increased by chanting. Then a person joins, and then he begins to associate, that's Sadhu Sangha. And Prabhupada then explains that Mahamantra attracts thousands of men to our camp. In some areas, people begin even to imitate the devotees by shaving their heads and chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra only a few days after hearing the mantra. So there are, I know, a few instances of this. At least there was one in Japan when one devotee, one man came, one Japanese boy when I was there, 1970. He came and then he stayed for a few days in the temple and then he went out and he stole books from us and a pair of kartals and a dhoti and kurta, and then he went out and he got a rug and he set it up in the middle of the street in Japan, shaved his head with a sika, and started chanting Hare Krishna and distributing books like that. And then there were some devotees in Hawaii who, of course, that one happened to be somewhat crazy, but in Hawaii Prabhupada also explained that first there was a group of yogi hippies, and they began chanting Hare Krishna, and then the whole group, including the leader of the group, offered themselves to Prabhupada for initiation. So what started off as Prabhupada said is imitation of a good thing, but then it actually purified them to the point of practicing Bhajana Kriya. But of course, if there's going to be that type of imitation, it can't stay on the imitative platform. It has to come to the platform of actual surrender. Anyone know any other examples of these things?
I sit in Sydney and had the experience of a lot of people kind of imitating devotees there, going out distributing books, and especially the haircut, I was noticing.
Yeah.
One guy had the same shape, but he's short, with exactly with like a small sticker.
Yeah.
With a Buddha.
Yeah.
And I stopped him on the street and he bought a book, and he just had that haircut. Yeah.
Didn't know anything about Krishna consciousness.
No, I must have copied it off the devotees.
Yeah.
And then there's this other guy working in a vegetarian restaurant who he met the devotees at a festival, and he's talking to him, and he just kind of thought that the seeker was pretty cool. Yeah. So he's got a big one now.
Yeah.
And then and I went into this hairdresser's, and there was this young guy working there, and he had that like bald head. And he had this plaited seeker.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, it's nice. And he told me that it was super glued onto his head. Anyway, so there's quite a lot of people copying that haircut.
Yeah. Now they should also copy the chanting of the Maha Mantra. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I was once in an AMP parking lot, and I was giving someone a book, and he said, are you really a Hare Krishna? I said, yeah. And so he said, you got to come to my office, So he came, I went to his office, he was a newspaper reporter, and they had on his desk, he had a picture of devotees in a can, and it said, send a Krishna to camp. And he had all his money collected, you know, kids putting in as like a joke. And he says that, he said, yeah, we're really into it. He said, his name was Adidas, like Adidas.
Yeah.
And he said, this is Hagen Das. Like the ice cream, you know, and then the leader who was actually really into Krishna, they called him Vishnu Das. And every year on April Fool's Day, they dress up as devotees and they go to work. But they were really, actually, they were kind of interested and they came to the temple.
And chant Hare Krishna?
Yeah.
But the point here is that just by associating and chanting Hare Krishna, it has effect, and as one faith increases, now these people are imitating and doing it as a joke possibly, but if one keeps up the association and the chanting, then one will actually come to the platform where his faith increases and he wants to begin some bhajan, or the practice of actually worshipping the Supreme Lord. Kriya means like doing bhajan. So Prabhupada continues, if one is sincere, he is initiated, and this stage is called Bhajana Kriya. And one then actually engages in the service of the Lord by regularly chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra 16 rounds daily, refraining from illicit sex, intoxicants, meat eating, and gambling. By Bhajana Kriya, one attains freedom from the contaminations of materialistic life, and so forth. He no longer goes to a restaurant, a hotel, to taste so-called palatable dishes made with meat and onions, nor does he care to smoke or drink tea or coffee. He has not only refrains from illicit sex, but avoids sex life entirely. Nor is he interested in wasting his time in speculating or gambling. And in this way, it is to be understood that one is becoming cleansed of unwanted things, anartana vritti, things that are no actual arta or value or gain, or object. They are being cleared from the heart. So these anartas are removed, they're vanquished when one becomes attached to the Krishna consciousness movement. Then, when a person is relieved from these unwanted things, he becomes fixed in executing Krishna conscious activities. Until one is anartana vritti, freed from these anartas, which practically means tado rajas tamo bhava kama labhadeyas chaye, that it practically means that one is free from the two lower modes of material nature, passion and ignorance. Until one is like that, Chief Jago, one day I'll ask to see your notes and then you'll be embarrassed. Elise, can you just like move a little to the side there? So, he's a writer. He's an artist. He's he's a poet. He's a computer hacker.
He's an electronics man.
He's an electronic genius, but he is not yet in Bhajanakriya.
This is a problem.
Therefore, no anartinavritti syat. So, until one is relieved from passion and ignorance, one cannot actually be fixed in his Krishna conscious, fixed and steady in his Krishna conscious activity. And that, when one is actually situated in the mode of goodness, then he is called nishta. When he's fixed in the mode of goodness, free from the anarthas, and engaged in Krishna conscious activities. The nishta refers to the being fixed in the activities of Krishna consciousness. Then, he becomes fixed in executing Krishna consciousness. Indeed, he becomes attached to such activities and experiences ecstasy in executing devotional service. This is called bhav, the preliminary awakening of dormant love of God. So, in between that nishta and bhava is ruchi, where one has a taste, and then the attachment that Prabhupada mentions, and then by the potency of that attachment, it attracts the mercy of Krishna, and one comes to the platform of bhava. And then on that platform, there's no question of having anything to do with the body, practically speaking, or conditioned life, or material knowledge, or material attractions. One understands who he is, who Krishna is, and what Maya is. And here's an interesting point, that although Maya, sort of the last third of page 71, although Maya may be present, it cannot disturb a devotee once he attains the bhava stage. This is because the devotee can see the real position of Maya. Maya means forgetfulness of Krishna, and forgetfulness of Krishna and Krishna consciousness stand side by side like light and shadow. If one remains in shadow, he cannot enjoy the facilities offered by light, and if one remains in light, he cannot be disturbed by the darkness of shadow. So the idea is that that sometimes we think that one day we're going to wake up and Maya will be gone. Just like that, as if some magic, we're praying or hoping against hope in that way. But actually, even at the stage of bhava, which is an extremely rare advanced stage, Maya is still present. Maya only leaves at prema bhakti. Maya is still there at bhava, although Maya is insignificant. Just like would a person who has $1,000,000 trade his wealth for 10 paisa? No, why would he do that? Because trade something of great value for lesser value? But still, similarly, although bhava is so wonderful and Maya is so horrendous, Maya is still there, and there's still maybe a chance. Not at bhava, really. But still Maya is there at bhava.
You mean that Maya in some way is controlling the person?
No.
You mean Maya is tempting?
But no, Maya is there. But one is not completely situated in Krishna. That's the point. That means Maya is there to some degree, but as a one is not completely in Krishna. One way of looking at it is that the namaparats are completely finished. Another way to look at it, namaparats are gone completely in prema. And then another way to look at it is that in bhava, one enters Krishna Leela, more or less. Mm-hmm. Enters Krishna Leela occasionally. He sort of pops in and then comes out. He goes into ecstasy and then comes out and then thinks, was I dreaming or what? What happened? And so this happens occasionally. In prema, he's fully absorbed, and the body practically isn't made for prema. No, I mean, that's why Lord Chaitanya, because the body can't be contained. The ecstasy of the soul is too great for the body, and it comes. The ecstasy comes bursting through in sattvika bhavas. So, and Srimati Radharani and Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sometimes they would they would exhibit these, so many Mahabhavas coming all at once, you know, crashing to the ground. Mahaprabhu exhibited the joints of his body becoming dislocated, or sometimes all his limbs would go into his body and blood would be coming from the pores of his body. So the material body is, it can't really contain the prema of the devotee.
The way I heard it explained once, I think you could acknowledge that this is right, is that someone said in that prayer of Yamunacharya, Nava Navarasa, that he was on the stage of Baba, and therefore sometimes the thought of sex life was there, but when he thought of it, he spit.
Yeah, insignificant. Someone you might think, oh, yeah, maybe I'll change my $1 million for 10 paisa. Am I crazy? Ridiculous.
Yeah. From what I've heard, that on the stage of Bhava, Krishna starts to appear in the mind.
Like that's what I described.
But in prema, he actually stands in front of you. Whereas in Bhava,
yeah, that comes from that description. Sounds like it comes from Krishna comes and the devotee faints. Mm-hmm. Five times as each of his senses come in contact with the true essence of Krishna. And this way prema is. But still, then the neck, one could actually, from that, but it all increases. It's not like boomp, boomp. There's different stages and everything, and it's a gradual progression. It's not like one day you're in it. You're at Bhajana Kriya, and the next day Anartana Vritti, and then 5 days later, you know, suddenly you're at, it's a gradual, the anattas gradually go, and then one gradually becomes fixed. Then as one becomes fixed, one develops a taste, and that taste gradually thickens until it's called the shakti, and then Krishna's mercy comes, and then one is bhava, uttama bhakti, and then that, there's different stages of that, and there's different stages of prema.
So it seems like then the only thing that kind of like pushes you on is your greed to have the goal, to attain the goal.
That's right. That the impetus becomes Krishna. One more and more increases his taste to love Krishna until he can't live a moment without Krishna. And then he goes beyond that.
So is there such a thing as artificial greed, or, you know, just like we know that there's the devotional service can be imitated.
But that also, that imitative attachment, which comes from association with pure devotees, by continued association it can turn into the real thing. Mm-hmm. So nothing done for Krishna ever goes in vain. Even Putana, who imitated the affection of a real mother in offering Krishna her breast to drink milk, was awarded with liberation. So nothing goes in vain if we want Krishna. But it comes through increase of hearing and chanting and association. One's actual greed increases. But if one is on one hand saying or showing that he's loving Krishna, and on the other hand he's attached to abominable materialistic activities, then we can know that the person, his attachment is Sahajya, or Abhas, Ratyabhas, Chayabhas, Chaya, Para, shadow attachment. So those aren't considered the real thing, but it's sort of like giving a future hope to the person. Except for if one is a Mayavadi, this is described in Nectar Devotion, and he is imitating affection for Krishna, that will do him no good. But if one is a simple person and he's imitating through the association of devotees the affection for Krishna, that will ultimately do him some good.
That was about the Sahajiyas. I was thinking we shouldn't be too in a hurry to condemn them.
Really? Why?
Because their imitation of a good thing is will bring them.
Yeah, but they're also imitating the bad thing by having sex life and things like that.
Almost like the hippies.
No, see, that's also actually explained in the next verse, that one shouldn't imitate all in a material body the activities of the Lord that take place in the spiritual body. That's actually abominable, and it's cheating to use Krishna for your own sense pleasure like that. There's when we're talking about imitative, we're talking something about an innocence, but still we could say it's like giving a future hope to them because they're going to Krishna.
There's
using Krishna. But we must condemn them very vigorously because we certainly don't want to fall into the traps of imitation. Sahaja is one type of upra sampradaya, right? 11, I think. Upra sampradayas. Yeah, we condemn them. Srila Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakura condemn them, we also condemn them.
I was just wondering if you might be able to shed some light. The way Srila Prabhupada words, I remember reading this as a new devotee, this whole part starting from where if one is sincere and Vajranakriya and then going all the way up to Baba. And the way it's worded, it sounds like, you know, maybe I'll get Baba in about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So I've
get it. Baba is Sudulaba.
Right. That's one of my question was, if you had any realization or understanding of why Srila Prabhupada makes it sound so easy sometimes.
Well, sometimes we make it sounds easy to encourage us because we don't have the determination and deep conviction come with purity and culture and knowledge. And since we neither have purity or culture or knowledge, unless we think that we're going to actually attain it immediately, we probably wouldn't bother. No, can't be bothered. Sounds like it's too hard. So therefore, sometimes it's put like that. I don't want to predicate Prabhupada's mind too much in that, but it's not easy. We could say it is easy if you're pure, if you're an uttama adhikari, if you have full knowledge of the shastra, and you have no material attachments, and you're coming like that. Then it is easy if you have the right association. But most of us really aren't like that. Some scars from previous lives are rotten, and some scars from this life are rotten. And then we come, and as we practice, we see that so many anarthas come bubbling to the surface, and it's not easy to rid us of, to reach the stage of anarthanivritti nishta. But the guarantee is that if we do take to the process, then we will get there. Utsahan nischayadaya tat tat karma pravartana jana sangha sato vite sadvya bhakti prasidyati. That if we actually follow the process carefully, what we're thinking is a long time. You know, if someone told you in the beginning, you know, in 20 years, you know, you'd still be trying to clean the anarthas from your heart and you'd be struggling with them, you'd think, well, what's the use of even getting on the train? So, but when you think about it, what is 20 years in the face of eternity? But yet, because our brains are teeny and our consciousness is teeny, we think it's great. So therefore, sometimes an expert preacher will encourage this in a simple way. I remember in 1968, sitting at 22nd Avenue in the courtyard inside, and Prabhupada was upstairs in his room, and Prabhupada had just introduced the concept of GBC. So I remember speaking with one devotee who was named to the GBC at that time, and he was thinking, and I was saying, I sure hope that if Prabhupada's not around, and that there'll be at least one pure devotee there to be on the GBC, or, you know, to lead the society. And he told me, in 10 years, I suspect that the GBC men will all be pure devotees. So that was the naivete of youth, although that person wasn't so young. But that was naivete, but it was sort of an innocence of faith in the Mahamantra and faith in Prabhupada. The mood in the early days especially was that we would become Krishna conscious in this life if we were serious about taking to the process. So on one hand, there's this, come. It's very easy. And that is to make us more eager. And it's true. It's simple for the simple. And if we just chant Hare Krishna offenselessly, everything will be perfect. But on the other hand, there's the knowledge that our hearts are so contaminated, it will take many, many, many lives. And there's that Bombay Vyasa Puja offering that Prabhupada made to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, where he said, I don't expect to gain the direct service of Krishna for crores of life, of births. So this is the mood of a devotee, actually. The more advanced devotee has the combination of eagerness and humility. We usually have that one of the anartas is called one of the real beginning anartas that makes us unsteady is called utsaha mayi, or the enthusiasm of a baby. When after reading one book, after reading the Bhagavad Gita, you know, some new devotee, and you see this sometimes, he thinks he knows everything. And he can't, you know, these people, you know, I really understand everything and I have it together. And you see that, right, in new bhakti sometime. That's a particular anartha, utsaha, mayi, enthusiasm of a child. So what happens is, he keeps it up for a while, he goes marching, you know, I know just what happens, I'm going to go out, you know, I'm going to save the world, and then he goes into it. You don't have to say anything. You know, he walks into a brick wall quite soon, and then he's completely demolished, and he wants to bloop and leave, and you have to like pick him up together, glue him back together. It's alright. So on one hand, there's the enthusiasm and conviction that I can do it easily. That's the nishtayat, but there must be the darya, the patience of knowing how many lifetimes our heart has been covered. And as we become eager and yet become more humble, we're being molded into the right consciousness. Someone recently told me the tendency is to want to be, to think that I'm qualified now to go back to God. Or not qualified, but I'm ready to go back to Godhead now. And then on the other hand, there's another type of a devotee who thinks there are so many other people more qualified than me. I am so unqualified. And that person, of course, is more qualified. And he's actually in a closer to the right consciousness of actually achieving Krishna's mercy. No, it means ready to attain the lotus feet of Krishna, be situated in one's constitutional position in one of the five mukya ras, mukya staibhav, which is described in the next verse. Now, the next verse is very interesting. Are there questions?
Yeah. So, I was just thinking about, so in our preaching, it seems that we have to be sensitive. Like, say my position, maybe getting some realization of how far I am from Krishna consciousness. And the tendency, I know my tendency, especially like in Vrindavan, where there's a lot of devotees kind of, you know, and so, you know, we're all kind of struggling together and been around almost the same amount of time. So we'll share those realizations. But it seems like, in my tendency might be sometimes to share similar realizations with like a new devotee. But it might be intelligent not to control yourself and not preach that same way to someone who's just a new devotee. In other words, I find that it's sometimes it's hard, just like yesterday when I was mentioning that question about chanting, you know, having faith in the chanting in 2 weeks. Because I had forgotten what it was like to be my first experiences of chanting. So is that right that we have to be, we might not want to go ahead?
I think if you're fixed in your position of where you are, and you're actually well situated and determined, then I think it's just by explaining the sincerity of the endeavor and what you have realized and what you haven't realized, I think ultimately people appreciate, perceive the sincerity and the truth. But one should be constantly, on one hand examining his position, on the other hand tasting the sweetness of Krishna consciousness. Now, if one isn't tasting the sweetness of Krishna consciousness, and it's true that sometimes we do go through dry periods that can last quite a long time, one should chant Hare Krishna more sincerely and study. And we find that if we do take to the direct processes of chanting and hearing, then we actually get things in the proper perspective. But if we, and our intelligence orders things properly, I see that with some of us, as soon as, you know, we may be spinning around in one sense, but as soon as we apply our intelligence to studying the Bhagavatam, immediately we become fixed in our actual position, whatever it is. And that's very helpful. And then we see the perspective of that we are making advancement, and we see that we're becoming aware of the faults within us, which is certainly a step towards they're being removed. But also, since we know that an uttama devotee, he's thinking himself, everyone else is such an advanced devotee but me, and he's thinking himself most fallen, so he's achieved that, and it's not that he loses it, but he has natural humility. And when we look at the example of Haridas Thakur, who wouldn't even take prasadam of the Vaishnavas, or even Rupa and Sanatan, who would not go into the Jagannath temple, we can see that the humility and feeling fallen and seeing one's faults is, on one hand, it doesn't leave us as we make advancement, and on the other hand, it doesn't stop us from loving Krishna. Rather, it's a vehicle for loving Krishna. So it's a matter of resolving that. I think we have a false conception of what perfection is. You know, it's a mechanical, some type of mechanical man who, I don't know where it comes from, but it's, I don't think it's very accurate. It's not that even in the spiritual world, See, the thing is that as soon as you have qualities, there's not just one series of qualities that can make up a person that is the qualities that are of purity. There are general qualities, the 26 qualities of a devotee, mercifulness, this and that, which all basically come from softness of heart and lack of pretension. But even Srimati Radharani and her left-wing gopi friends, they're very bold under Lalita Devi. They argue with Krishna. Lalita Devi is telling Radharani, you should not be submissive to this rascal. You know, men don't like it. You should not be submissive to him whatsoever. You should argue with him. She preaches like that to him. And on the other side, there's Chandravali, who's very meek like that. And they're both very jealous. So if we have jealousy, we think it's a horrible quality, and it is a horrible quality because it's materially contaminated, but it's not. There's not going to be any time that we're qualityless, in the sense that even in the spiritual world, there's opposing qualities. But not that that allows us to be jealous or allows us to be envious and things like that, because those are all coming from the Ladini Shakti, and they all give pleasure to Krishna. But it's not that there's one. We have personalities and individual strengths. One devotee may be more attracted to kirtan, another one may be more attracted to deity worship, another more attracted to studying, another to You know what I mean? Okay. So it's not really just a dry, rigid thing, Krishna consciousness and advancement. Although definitely there are qualities of a devotee. Titikshava, Karunika, etc. These are the qualities that are born of the mode of goodness and beyond. The compassion, the friendliness to all living entities, the tolerance. These are the qualities of a devotee. So when we see ourselves lacking these, and we take shelter of Krishna and pray to Him, then that's the vehicle, the combination of humility and feeling oneself incapable of making advancement due to his lack of qualities, and on the other hand, his intense attraction and desire to love Krishna in a particular way. So these two provide the power to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. But the reason why I'm presenting it from this side is that if we get too involved with thinking how fallen we are, it will sap all our energy for the positive, chanting Hare Krishna, studying. You know, we just get, I've seen so many devotees just so get so caught up in this self-flagellation, think of how fallen they are, and it really doesn't help them make any advancement. The point is that as soon as one understands his fallenness, he doesn't dwell on thinking about, oh, how fallen I am. No. Feeling incapable of loving Krishna, he takes shelter of Krishna and begs for mercy. Saying that, oh Lord, many great munificent persons have given their charity to those who are not qualified for that charity. You please benedict me. History has shown us that a person who is munificent sometimes doesn't consider the qualification. So please, you benedict me, for I'm certainly needing this. I'm rolling on the ground, just begging for this. You know, my heart is fixed on you, and you are so merciful. But when you're saying you are so merciful, one has to know who he's talking to. One has to know the qualities and know how to pray properly. And who to pray to. So without the attraction, the humility is useless. Looks like we're not going to go into 8 today. No, I think we should do, I think we can finish. I don't know if we can, 8 is really a deep, deep one. We're starting to enter, starting at 8, we start entering deeper and deeper. Because here, in 7, Prabhupada, or Rupa Goswami has explained the removal of anarthas, vidunoti siddhichitam shrim vitam svakata krishna punya shavana kirtanam vidyanta sto. Situated in the heart, abhadrani vidunoti suvichitam, they're removed. He's describing the anarthas removed by the process of and then coming up. So then, in the next verse, it describes what happens as one is making advancement, or what can happen if one is greatly, greatly fortunate. So everyone should make sure that they read the entirety of text 8, and because it's very intimate and maybe complex, so be prepared for asking questions and see how well how deeply we can understand what this Raghunuga Bhakti is. Because that's what this verse is about. Any more questions or comments? Okay. Thank you.